to the Making Better Bovine Babies podcast, produced by Repro 360. Proudly sponsored by Vetoquinol, our mission is to help accelerate the rate of genetic gain across the Australian cattle industry. We're thrilled to be able to share with you some of the stories, knowledge and expertise from our cattle vets and producers around the country, as well as some insights from our own team. We hope we can inspire, educate and at times entertain you as we delve into the fascinating world of making better bovine babies.
They say when something is too good to be true, it usually is, except in the case of Wagyu cattle, which continue to defy the odds when it comes to performance. I'm Rebecca Arnott, and today I'm speaking with Matias Suarez, AACo's Regional Manager, Breeding and Genetics, and also Dr. Adam Wise, about a fixed-time AI program on Dalgonelli Station outside Julia Creek, which yielded truly remarkable results. Matias, I'll start with you. Tell me, how does a boy from Argentina come to be the manager of AACo's Breeding and Genetics?
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for the invite. And yeah, to answer that question, so basically, I, as you said, I come from Argentina, migrated 20 years ago to Australia to further my studies into breeding program design and genetic evaluations and everything around the genetic improvement of animals. Did that at the University of New England by spending 3 years doing postgrad studies. I'm a qualified veterinarian. I did that for 5 years back in Argentina. So continue to work within the area of genetic improvement pretty much for the last 20 years. In the breed plan environment, pretty much at a research, then development, then extension of that research and development. Also worked with a pharmaceutical company, also got involved in the business development and managing the launch of genomics into Australia in the beef cattle environment. And yeah, after that, Anna Spears tapped on my shoulder and asked me to come and work for her at AACo. I did that 3 years ago and I'm still loving it. So
AACo's Wagyu herd is certainly one of the most highly regarded globally, and I think it's also the largest. Is that right?
Anecdotally, it is the largest. We don't really publish size exactly how many Wagyu cows we do have. None of our competitors do the same, but we do know that we are, if not the biggest.
Can you tell us about the herd and how AACo has transformed over the last 20 years or so from running around 700,000 Bos Indicus and composite type cattle to, I'm guessing, half this number of predominantly Wagyu and composites?
I will tell you the story that I know. I don't know the whole story from the last 20 years. I'll tell you the most recent part of the story that I'm involved in. A company became a beef company. So we are actually, our role now is to sell high quality beef to different markets overseas and sometimes in Australia too. That's what we do today. And to do that, it was recognized by previous boards that getting into Wagyus was the best way to enhance the beef that we're going to be selling. So we walked into the Wagyu industry probably in 2014, I think it is. In order to do that, we basically understood that we had to provide the right context or the right environments for those animals to be raised in our properties up north. And that meant we needed to produce F1s. And to do that, we needed a female or a maternal cow that is adapted to those environments. And that's why we continue on the path of raising and breeding composites. We have a breeding program that accounts for the type of composite that we need in certain parts of northern Australia, where we have challenges like ticks and mosses and humidity. And we also have some other type of composites that we use on more or less harsh environments like the Barclay and things like that. So that's the maternal side. On the paternal side, we continue to develop the Wagyu herds that we source externally. We continue to ride the best science-based approach we can to continue to improve that Wagyu, and we measure that. We measure not only the animals itself, but the progeny and the carcasses and the feed intake at feedlots and you name it. We record a lot of things on not only the animals but the progeny, and by doing that we continue to enhance our Wagyus that will provide the paternal or the terminal sire to that to that F1. On top of that, we also produce our Wagyu purebreds and full bloods as well. And we moved away from being a commodity or a company that sells TSCs over the hook to actually be owning our own destiny by producing our own beef and selling it ourselves.
Matthias, what is AACo's vision with the Wagyu breed and how do you plan on realizing this?
So basically with our Wagyu, we have a significant herd of Wagyu and we identified a while ago that it was important for us to address some welfare concerns that this industry has, and that is the dehorning of animals that happens every station up north. So we moved away from continue to grow our full blood herd and started focusing on dehorning that Wagyu herd genetically. And we did that through introgressing the genetics of that poolness genetics into our full bloods, creating a growing purebred Wagyu herd, where we are infusing the goodness of that marbling and carcass characteristics and everything else that we know that we have on the full bloods, we are infusing it into this purebred herd that it's significantly growing and growing. And it's not just growing, but it's also catching up the quality of that full blood herd. So the way we see it is we need a Wagyu herd that addresses the welfare concerns of our customers and our industry. Therefore, we're working towards a purebred whole Wagyu.
As I understand it, it wasn't long after Dr. Enoch Bergman's Beef Australia seminar on improving heifer productivity through fixed-time AI that your North Queensland regional manager, Clint Wachner, put forward a proposal to trial fixed-time AI in the north, but on wet cows rather than heifers. What was your initial response to his proposal, given very little fixed-time AI had been done in WAGs so far north, let alone on wet EU cows?
Yeah, I'm really, really stoked with Clinton. He's actually a really, really good colleague of mine, and he had this idea that he wanted to trial, as you said, at Dagonelli, an AI in the middle of a wet season or in the middle of January, February up north. And you all guys know Dagonelli, sitting at North Queensland close to Julia Creek, it's a tough environment, and most likely at that time of the year is going to be a challenging season to actually doing it. But he wanted to do that with wet cows because of the way we run Dagonelli station. It had to be with wet cows. So yeah, we immediately went into planning, got Sophia and Julie involved in a number of things to help us out on training and development of the actual AI protocols itself. Got Adam and Seth Wise to help us as well with the setup of that program. And yeah, we went and actually did it.
The odds certainly seem stacked against a good result. What were some of the main challenges you faced?
The main challenge is location. So trying to organize an AI in a big station where we run big groups of cattle is always a challenge. The synchronization process of bringing cattle in and out of yards 3-4 times when they have calves on foot, as you old guys know, it's a really challenging experience. Those calves tend to be small. The heat affect them. They have to be weaned or temporarily weaned a number of times, and that produces attrition, and we wanted to minimize that. So location, wet cows, the ability and the availability of small pens to do those holding pens to keep those females in and out of crashes, the wet calves or the little calves next to mums, and the possibility of having a storm, the possibility of that being that have to be done in a really, really hot environment where we have probably 50 mils or 100 mils drop on us in the middle of it. So that's, in a nutshell, the challenges we had in front of us. As expected, it was really hot, and we were part of the decision to actually do this trial up north was to see if we can do it in a really, really challenging or risky time of the year. We did not want to do this in the winter, or we did not want to sugarcoat what was going to happen with the weather. So yeah, the weather didn't show up, and we had that 40 plus degrees happening that week. The availability of trained staff up north, it's not there. We never done anything similar to this at Dagonelli or Canovi or any other station close to that we can bring in. So we have to deal with our staff, and at that time of the year they are pretty much finishing for the year, so we only had what we had and they were all tired. And it's a challenge that we had to go through, and thanks to the Repro 360 ladies that helped us out on that training.
You certainly didn't muck around, as it was only 20 months or so after Beef Australia the 380 head were being synchronized. What steps did you and the team put in place to turn this idea into a reality?
Basically, what we did is we engaged directly with the station manager. So Phil Acton from Diagonelli Station came pretty much the project manager here and started the process of identifying, as you said, the females that we were going to use. So we plan to get Adam up north to practice that group of females and identify which ones were the right timing or the right joining timing to be the ones to be synchronized next year. We planned that well ahead, so we actually knew which cows were going to be the ones selected for it. And we used the same bet that was going to run the AI. That's important, at least for us, to make sure that everything is consistent and everyone is happy on those outcomes. Phil organized the actual supplementation program to make sure that those females were on a rising plane before and after. We also identify from our end, from the Brigham Genetics team up here in Brisbane, the right semen that we wanted to use on that AI. That meant we pretty much used some of our best genetics to make sure we infuse that genetics up north as much as we can. And yeah, we just went and did it.
To get a good AI result, it's critical synchronization is done well, i.e. giving the right hormones at the right time, in the right place, at the right dose, etc. How did you achieve that with an inexperienced team?
As you know, Beckham and others, hopefully your audience, is that the amount of drugs or the doses that we use on these drugs are really, really tiny amounts. And that meant the attention to detail and the actual quality of that application of those drugs needs to be absolutely spot on. Without disrespect to anyone, we cannot just rush it, or we cannot just use the wrong gun or have a dirty gun or don't change the needles enough. And so we have to be absolutely meticulous on the application of these drugs. So we engage Sophia and Julie and yourself on making sure that you can come to our station, help our guys understand the importance, understand the dosage, understand the place of application of some of those injections, understand how to put those cumates in, the way we put them in, the way we pull them out, and those strings, if they were too long, they probably need to be cut so the cows don't pull them from each other when they are waiting to be walked through the crush. There are a number of those details that we have to be meticulous at, and I think it adds to that, what we call them, those 1%. If we work towards reducing the chance of losing those 1%, we can end up with good outcomes. And that's what we try to do in every single one of our AIs, is making sure we are attention to detail be at 100%.
I'll leave the details about the protocol and results to Adam, but I'd like to close with you by asking two questions post-AI. Firstly, did all the handlings during synchronization have an impact on the weaning rate of the calves at foot?
So I will have to answer this question anecdotally, because we don't record the weights of those calves before and after. So I will have to base it on the feedback I get from our station managers. And the weight of those calves did not suffer at all. The temporary weaning that those calves go through, it's just really temporarily and short-term. So they don't seem to affect them. The mothering up that happened straight after the cow or that cow left the crush was really good. The evidence we see is those calves went back into mum straight away. We did not see any dead calves after the event. So that meant, yeah, there's no suffering. But what we are seeing is the calving of that AI, it's all happening within 10 days. And that is absolutely spectacular. And it's already showing the benefits of running a mob of calves with calves that are all of the same age. It's a lot easier to handle or to manage a herd when all the calves are the same age, and that's showing right now.
And lastly, would you do it again? And if so, what would you do differently next time?
Oh, absolutely. This is one part of the bigger puzzle. We are moving towards increasing these sort of programs, not just at Diagonelli, but a lot of our other stations up north. And we want to go slow. We want to grow slowly. We start with one, but this year we have to postponed because of weather or seasonal conditions, but this time next year we'll be doing it in at least two other stations, and the size will be similar or even bigger than what we did this year.
Thank you very much, Matthias, for your time and sharing your experience.
Thank you, Beck, and yeah, all the best.
I'm keen to continue the discussion about the challenges faced on Dalganelli from the veterinarian's perspective. So I'm going to launch straight into this with Adam Wise and then have a quick chat about his background at the end.
Adam, welcome.
Thanks, mate. Good to be here.
Matthias covered some of the challenges faced with the program, but I'd be keen to hear from your perspective what these were and how they were managed or overcome.
Well, the major challenges for me anyway, I suppose, was we haven't done a lot of AI up that way in that time of year, trying to work in around wet seasons, and not that they had one that year, but making sure that the nutrition of the herd before and after the program was adequate to maintain a good result. And then just the heat, really. Cattle stress during hot times, it was about 43, 45 degrees up there during the AI time. We tried to make it late as night and early as morning as possible, but didn't sort of change too much. And they're all wet cows that we're doing, so again, nutrition had to be right for them.
I understand it was also an EU herd.
That's right, yeah, we had to use an EU program, which generally speaking, the program doesn't tighten up the heat times as well as the non-EU program where we can use estradiol. So we just had to work with Julie really on that one and made a program that suited the management of the cattle up there and was going to get the best result.
I believe the staff had no prior experience for synchronising cattle. It was you doing all the arm work on the 380 head?
Yeah, that's correct. The team were great, though. They took everything on board and they're really willing. Some places we go to, Jillaroos and Jackaroos are a bit, you know, just chuck the bull in sort of attitude. But the whole team up there was really behind it and they were quite keen to get a good result and do things right, which worked well for them.
Despite all these challenges, you were cautiously optimistic at the time of AI. Why was that?
We put heat patches on all the cattle. The response that we had just showing estrus was quite good, and the cattle coming through the yards, they didn't show heat stress at all. There was no tongues hanging out during the whole process, and they all had calves on them. They drafted them off out the back before they came up, and the cows were really settled, and just a good response to the program really with showing estrus. So.
Do you remember what proportion of the mob showed a heat overall?
Overall, I'd have to have a look at that. Sorry, Beck, but we had a lot more showing heat early than I'd usually have on an EU program. So this was a 9-day, like a fixed time program, AIing on day 9, and by day 8 on lunchtime, we drafted all the cows that had come on heat, and I think it was about 70% of the cows that were on heat. Early, like by lunchtime on day 8, which is quite phenomenal for most EU programs I've worked in. I'd be around 15-20% in that time. So that gave me a bit of wind up the sail and said this could work. Yeah, the cows were in good nick, and they were in good body condition, not fat by any means, but like between 3 and 3.5 out of 5 body condition score, which is ideal for wet cows and moving forward. So.
And then the ones you hadn't AI'd on day 8 were given a second GNRH?
That's right, yes. Just to try and increase the likelihood of ovulation and try and make them a little bit tighter so we can AI them all the next morning on day 9.
So you touched on the heat and how well the cattle handled it. It must have been a bit tough on you too, even with age on your side, was it?
Yeah, that's right. Coming from the south, I'm a bit soft for the fellas up there, so I was probably feeling it more than they were, but we got through it. I had a good team up there that was thawing the semen for me and selecting the bulls, and I just had to stand in behind the cow and AIs. They brought them in, so I was only doing 2 steps at a cow, so I was going okay.
I hear you AI'd 85 head an hour while maintaining a very calm and relaxed environment.
Yeah, it's hats off to them. The management team and all the staff out the back bringing cows up and people on crushers and yard work, so they come through really well.
The protocol you used was a relatively new one. Can you tell me how this was discovered, for want of a better term?
Yeah, sure, Beck. So it was discovered really through just a collaboration between myself, AOCO, and Julie Pocock there at Vertical Nile. So we went for the 6-day Q-mate instead of the normal or the usual 5-day one, and it just makes a bit more sense to me that we got a day older corpus luteum there on a lot of these cows that with the Q-mate in for that extra day. So when we're giving the prostaglandin on day 6, we give it morning and night on day 6. The corpus luteum is just that day older, so hopefully it works on a few more of them than if it's a 5-day corpus luteum.
The protocol requires cows to go through the yards at least four times and five times for those that haven't shown a heat on the first AI day. It's certainly quite a bit of work, isn't it? Drafting off the calves, mothering them up again each time, putting them in holding paddocks between treatments and so forth. How did the Dalgonalli Wags stand up to this handling and particularly the risk of mismothering?
Well, this herd handled it really well, actually. But so sometimes, because it does spread out, I'll just go back, it does spread out the heat time. So I can AI on the afternoon of day eight and morning of day nine in like a four-hour window in each of those times. So we can run reasonably big mobs. So, for example, if you're just AI them at a fixed time and you're doing it all in a four-hour window, then the mob size, you might only have 250 to 300. But because it's split and we can AI over them two times, we can have a bigger mob size, which means we don't have to draft cows and calves by mother up prior to the program. So you can just run them all as one mob. After each AI, the cows just ran back with the calves and mothered up for that night, and they ran them back through the next morning.
And the extra handling comes in where valuable semen is used and the focus is on getting good results, isn't it?
That's right. It all just comes back down to the management team and if they can just plan ahead, really. The Dalgonalli team up there, they had plenty of hay on standby that if the cows are in the yards overnight or just for a few hours during the morning while they're drafting on, they'd be on hay just so they'll calm in the yards and weren't getting hollow for the day in the yards and going out and wanting to graze rather than mother up. So
I believe backup bulls went in 2 weeks later for around a month or one cycle to create an extremely tight overall joining period of 6 weeks. You then preg tested at around 12 weeks. Tell us about the results. This is the really exciting part, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And we used three different bulls up there in the for the AI. The bull variation was a little bit, but not too bad, about 8-9%, I'm pretty sure, between the top and worst bull, and they're all used pretty evenly. We ended up with about 57% to the AI, 89% in calf in a six-week join period. So for up there at that time of year, anywhere in Australia, really, that's a really good result. So
to reiterate, a pregnancy rate of 57% was achieved from fixed-time AI in wet EU Wagyu cows in northern Australia. And the balance, 32% to bulls, giving an overall result of 89% of cows in calf within the six-week joining period. These calves, now on the ground, are approximately 30 to 50 kilos heavier than their naturally mated counterparts, and at approximately $10 a kilo, that makes them $300 to $500 per head in front before AI costs. Adam, you've already touched on a few factors that attributed to such a good result. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think just pre-management, really, like pre-planning. We selected these cows out of a large group of Wagyu cows that were at Dalgonalli at the time. Went up there, I think it was about 6 months prior to the AI time, and preg-tested the herd that would go to calve down in our window. So they got pulled aside and looked after from then pretty well to calve down right in good condition and be moving forward for the AI program and after.
Do you get involved in the process of semen testing?
No, the client decides what they want to put in which cow, pretty much. But the semen testing, we do a lot of that and advise, you know, if the semen's already stored somewhere, then on a big program, they put in a lot of work to be putting semen that's no good or being mishandled somewhere along the chain. So I'd advise in a large program, particularly to send a few straws away to a reputable lab and have it tested for motility, morphology and concentration.
How often do you see errors occurring?
Errors occur quite a bit. We try and give clients as much information as possible, and I direct them to the Vetoquinol videos, and they're a great thing. And I actually sent them to Phil while we were devising this program up there, and Philip Acton up there, Dalgonalli, the manager, and he had a look through them, and because they're obviously green, they hadn't done any of this before, so they're a great starting point to do everything. And then we touched base with Julie, and she was kind enough to go up there and do the day zero with the team, so that was a great advantage.
Are some mistakes more common than others, and what proportion of these would you say were avoidable?
No, I think a lot of them are avoidable. Probably the dosage and handling or storage of the products is the biggest one. Like particularly like up north there, if it's 43 degrees, you don't want your products just sitting on the bench from the morning needles to the afternoon needles. They've got to be kept out of sunlight and in as cool as possible without freezing them, obviously, but just drug handling, really.
We mentioned earlier you were AIing 85 head an hour that day. I'm sure the facilities and yard design must have helped.
That's right, and just the cows had obviously been through those yards a few times, but that's another thing that Wagyu cows do. You can needle them as much as you want. They don't get annoyed at the program, really, a lot of them. They just keep coming. And yard design set up and those sort of things help immensely.
So, Adam, one can only conclude that provided seasonal conditions are adequate, there is no reason to doubt these results can't be achieved again and even improved on.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a game. If one thing's wrong, then it'll be a disaster. But if you line all your ducks up in a row, you'll get some good results. And the genetic gain from using bulls, not only just your weaner weights being high, but the genetic gain on retention females outweighs a lot, yeah.
Adam, you've summarised that well. Thank you. We didn't get to introduce you at the start, so I'd like to finish by asking you a few questions about your journey to becoming a repro vet and joining your dad's business. I'm also keen to hear a few of your insights regarding Wagyu cattle and assisted breeding programs in general. You have a Bachelor of Applied Science in Production Animals and a Bachelor of Veterinary Science from James Cook University. After this, you spent 4 years working in an intensive dairy practice in Victoria. What made you start your career in the dairy industry?
I think back, really, I just wanted to come back to cattle through my whole vet career journey anyway at uni. And I thought, I've done 6 years at uni. I might as well just make sure that's where I want to be and go into a mixed practice to start with. The mixed practice was about 90% dairy, so I did just stay with cattle most of the time down there. But that just made probably just me solidify that I just wanted to do cattle for the rest of my days, really.
In 2016, you returned home to join your dad in the Sedwise artificial breeding services business. How did you find this transition?
It wasn't too hard, really. I knew what I was getting myself into. Every school holidays growing up and through uni, I'd be home and work with my old man in the same job I was going back to, so I sort of knew what I was going to, yes.
I understand most of your work now is with the Wagyu breed, which are renowned for their hardiness and fertility, as well as their propensity to produce highly marbled beef. Are Wagyu cattle different to work with from an assisted breeding perspective than other breeds?
Yes, they are in a way that their fertility is naturally high, so that helps us in AI programs particularly. The embryo job, they're not as good as other breeds, but they're better than some, so that they're just average. In the bull side of the world, they're again pretty phenomenal. The quality and quantity of semen we can produce from a Wagyu bull, and very young on too. So the genetic gain for a lot of people breeding Wagyus is quite quick, really.
Generally speaking, how do the results of a Wagyu AI program compare with other breeds?
With your Bos Taurus breeds, like Angus would be our second most common breed to work with in AI programs, and they're on par, they're pretty similar. But if you go into Bos Indicus cattle, then they're a stretch above them, yes.
Thanks, Adam. We really appreciate your insights, especially during this extremely busy time of the year for you.
No worries. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for listening to the Making Better Bovine Babies podcast. You'll find an article on the Dalganelli Wagyu program on the Repro 360 website. If you're enjoying our podcast or learning something new, please give us a review and share it as you see fit. And lastly, don't forget to follow our Repro 360 YouTube channel for some helpful repro tips, how-to videos, and webinars.